All right. Thank you, Justin. Okay. Now, I am very happy to talk about our new speaker that's going to be coming up here in just a minute. And I'm sorry that I don't know her as well as I should, but I have seen her around the rooms, and I know she's got 34 years of sobriety. And her home group is Bridge Street Drunks. So, right on. And so it's my pleasure to announce Sherry to come up here and share with us tonight.
Am I on Zoom too? Hi, Zoom people. My name's Sherry, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a little nervous. I don't get out much these days, you know? And I don't know if I can talk for how long? You guys are very informative. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank the Valley Group for asking me to speak tonight. And so they told me that I need to share my experience, strength, and hope. So my sobriety birthday is March 13th, 19... What? Did you guys hear that? What was that? What'd you guys? March 13th, what? 1987. Woo! Woo! Nobody stays sober for that long. She must be lying. Anyway, and my home group is Brick Street Drunks. Goodness, where do I start? I'm nervous. I'm shaking up here. You guys want to dance? Okay. Anyway, so a little bit about my experience as an alcoholic. I don't know about you guys all got quiet now. This is going to be tough. All right. Anyway, I don't know about you, but I was a traveling drunk, meaning that I'd start drinking in Santa Cruz, California, and I'd wake up in Walla Walla, Washington. Did you guys ever do that? I start partying with Jim. I wake up with Jack. Yeah. Now you guys are relating to that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was my history. And I moved around a lot, needless to say. And one time I was living in this town, and you know when you guys go to bars sometimes and you get into fights and you get 86 out of the bar? I got 86 out of the whole town of Manteca. He said, Sherry, we want you to leave. We don't want you to come back. I said, why? What did I do? I thought I was a good girl. anyway, God, I can't believe how nervous I am. anyway, I found myself on a big truck, 18-wheeler, and my daughter was 4 years old, and I had no idea where I was going. And we're traveling, and we're going southbound and headed towards L.A., but I landed in this land called Goshen. You guys heard of Goshen? And I thought I found paradise. I said, yay, I have arrived. And I actually lived in the RV park for about 6 months, and this is a true story, before I even knew that Visalia existed. Yep, that's true. I stayed pretty drunk, intoxicated. People were coming in and out. It was the perfect location. You know, during my time out there, I never grouped up with anybody. I was like a solo drinker, you know. I didn't get into relationships. The only relationship I really had was with Jim and Jack. And of course, if you came along in my life and you mentioned the word love, I was history. I was gone. And so during my travels, I ended up in Goshen. And I graduated from the RV park to the Goshen Motel. That's big time now. But it was the only hotel that you ever went to that you had to bring your own bed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You guys are getting better. Come on. Laughter is good for the soul. Anyway, I was living there for a while and partying and doing my thing. I didn't know better. And I never, ever thought once in my whole entire life that alcohol was an issue. Ever. Never thought that. Never blamed anybody either, because I didn't stay around long enough to blame anybody. I just moved on. Excuse me. And so anyway, from then, I'm sorry. You tell him nervous? Guys, you still there? Dang it. Still there. Anyway, so I've moved into this little house out there in Goshen. And, I was doing my thing. And my neighbors had thought that I wasn't living a pretty good life. And by then I had my second child. So my oldest was about seven. Yeah, it was about seven. And my youngest was 6 months old. And they came in and raided my house. And they took my kids away. And they told me I had a problem. And I went to jail. And, of course, when I got out of jail, I was pretty angry. And I remember the judge telling me that I had to do this reunification plan, that I had to go into an inpatient program, and I had to do multiple things to get my children back. And my children couldn't go with any family members because they were all out of county, and they wanted the children here in the same county with the mom. So they had to stay in foster care. So I remember going to Pine Recovery when it was co-ed back in 1985. And had a lot of good times at Pine. Sure did. But, oh my gosh, takes me back. But I remember I was on the wait list to get in. And so, of course, I was drinking until I can get in. And finally I called, and her name was Wilma Jean. She was the main lady at the women's house. And she says, "Jerry, we got a bed. Come on in, roll it up." And I said, "Oh, yeah, but I got things to do, right? You know, all those important things that we got to do that we never get done." And so I showed up, and I was drunk. And I went in, and I sat down. And she started doing a little intake. And she got to the question, "Have you ever had any blackouts?" And I was serious as a heart attack. And I said, "I don't remember." "I don't know. I thought everybody drank like that, right? What was a blackout?" You know, and then I realized that one particular time I woke up from a night of drinking, and I was a little sore, and I had a T-shirt on and some chonies and went to the restroom, a little bit more detail than you want to know, right? And I was sitting on the toilet, and I looked down, and I said, "Holy shit. Oh, sorry. Holy shoot. I got a tattoo." And I had this tattoo. Now, I think it was supposed to be an eagle. I think that's what it was supposed to be, but it looked like a sketchy vulture. And to this day, I still don't know who gave it to me. I still don't. And there's more stories to that one, but that's one of mine. I remember going into Pine Recovery and did all the things they told me to do. I did the 12 steps in 12 days. You know, I didn't get a laugh on that one. You know, just trying to do what the judge told me to do, right? You know, playing the game, doing the manipulation, thinking if I do all these things they tell me, that they'll see that I'm a good person, they'll give my kids back, and I can go on my merry way. So I wasn't there for all the right reasons. I thought I was, but I wasn't. So I graduated from Pine Recovery. I'm an alumni. Booyah. What do they do? There you go. And I graduated and I got my little brick and everything. And it was just a matter of time that I had gone back out. You know, I switched the scotch from brandy, you know. And I knew enough people in the program. And what happens, there's a lot of new people here tonight. And what happens when you get introduced to AA? And they tell you, you're cursed in a good way. Because now you know that there's another way to go. Now you know you don't have to live that life anymore. I didn't know, you know. And they say denial is not the river in Egypt, you know. It's because I don't know that I'm lying. Anyway, you guys are a hard group. I went through Pine Recovery. I got out, went back out. That was back in 1985. 86, you know, they did an intervention on me, And I ended up going to another recovery home at the coast. It was all women. It didn't make a difference. It was co-ed or women. You know, it was the same thing. And I came back for all the wrong reasons. And I drank again. But something happened on March 13, 1987. And they talk about that in the first step. You know, powerless, unmanageability. I finally surrendered. You know, I knew I was going to die. You know, I just knew it. I felt it. And I had a taste of AA. I saw lights in people's eyes. I saw the love and the compassion that they showed me. And I wanted some of that. I really did. And but I didn't know how to get it. So I surrendered. I said, God, I don't know you, you know, but I think you know me because I think you brought me here. You know, because you kept me safe out there all these years, because by all rights, I should not be here. All the things and places I've been through and situations that I shouldn't have made it through, you know, but I'm here today. And back in those days, I don't know, back in those days, it seemed like we smoked in meetings. Could you imagine that? Oh, yeah. We smoke cigarettes, drinking coffee, and having a good old time, you know. But the sponsor that I got, she came up to me and said, I'm going to sponsor you. Thank God that she did that, because I was scared to death to go ask somebody to sponsor me. Because what if she said no? You know, and I was petrified, you know, so I'm glad she came up to me. And I wish I'd see more of that today, you know, I really do. You know, go up, you know, talk to somebody that's new, you know, see if they're struggling. Be their temporary sponsor if you need to. Excuse me. So she became my sponsor, and I did everything she asked me to do. And I like what this meeting does. They have greeters, and she made me do that at meetings, too. I had to stand at the door and shake people's hands and say, hi, I'm Sherry, and I'm an alcoholic. My hands would be sweating, my knees would be shaking, and I'd be sitting out there, and I'd say, please don't call on me, because I don't got nothing to say. You know, or what if I say something wrong and somebody's going to yell at me? You ain't saying that right. You know, but you know what? Nobody did that with me. You know, they kept loving me, you know. And so slowly, you know, step one was easy. I surrendered. You know, and they talk about, oh, there's two parts to step one. Well, yeah, but if you use one word, it's... it's piece of cake. It's all wrapped up. You surrender. You know, that's the honesty. That's that self-honesty inside. And step two, you know, coming to believe, I knew that there was somebody up there greater than myself. And they said, I don't have to have your God or his God. I find my own God or my own higher power. You know, and people said, you can borrow mine if you want to. I said, okay, I will. I'll borrow yours until I can find my own. And the third step, you know, is just become willing. And that's how it works. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. And they tell that in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The whole purpose of the book is to find a power greater than yourself. That's all it is. You know, it's a little boring at first. The words are big. I had to get a dictionary in the beginning and look up words. You know, and I read it over and over and over. It's like a textbook. All the answers are in there. Trust me, they are. I still get my solutions in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's taught me so much. So when it came to the fourth step, it was a piece of cake. I got that pen out and I started writing, did those columns, because I wanted to get that stuff out. They said, more will be revealed, so just get the surface out and get busy. You'll deal with it as you go along, because if God wanted you to deal with everything right then and there, I think I'd still be drunk. Honestly, I think I would. So thank goodness they told me that. And so when I hear people say they're struggling with their fourth step, I'm thinking, well, maybe we go back to one, two, and three. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You can't beat it. That's the key right there. That's why we read the readings, how it works. If you really listen to the words and really read that, it's all right there. It just sums it all up. So I did my fourth step, and then when I got to my fifth step, I told my sponsor, I don't know what a defect of character is, but I don't think I have any. Because I'm a nice girl, don't you know? But you know what? They talk about me in that book, too, about being nice and kind and all that stuff. So the answers are in the book. My goodness, they wrote about me. And I said, goodness, okay. So she helped me pull things out. She really did. And that was helpful. And at the end of my fifth step, she goes, now, is there anything that you didn't write down that you need to share? And I said, how does she know that? How does she know that? And by God, there was. There was a couple things that I swore that I'd never share with anybody, ever in my lifetime. And I took a chance. And I said, this is what it's about. This is what I need to do. I need to get honest with myself and with another human being. And so I told her, and she sat right there. And she said, oh, you too? I said, oh, imagine that. You too. See, we're not alone. You know, we come from different walks and different backgrounds. But we got a common bond. I didn't think I'd find any friends in here because normally we're people that don't mix, right? I wouldn't hang out with most of you. No way. But I couldn't do it without all of you. You know, I couldn't do it without all of you. So we go on and we find my defects of character. And then she says, okay, now let's not look at them as defects of character. Let's kind of look at them as shortcomings. And I said, I like that word better. It's softer. You know, defects like, whoa, stab you, you know. But shortcomings is a lot softer. You know, so we all have them. We're all going to have them. And they're going to continue to stay with us for the rest of our lives. It's recognizing them, being aware of them when they're in action, and then make the changes. You know, I can't change people, places, and things, but I can change my actions and my reactions. And it's taken a long time. I still fall. I still fall short. But I feel like I'm a whole lot better than I was. That was a senior moment. Actually, that really was. But I remember, that reminds me. When I did my third step prayer, this is a good story. When I did my third step prayer, we did it at St. Mary's Church. And we walked in, and it was just beautiful. It was dim, the candles were lit. It was just, I can't describe it. It was just absolutely beautiful. And it was quiet and silent. And we were walking down the aisle, and I was scared. And we get down there, and we kneel. We did a little candle. We kneeled. And I said, I don't know how to pray. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And she goes, that's okay. Just kneel. And so we kneel, and she starts praying, and then I start praying. And you know how you get ready to cry? You can feel the tears coming, right? Or when you're getting ready to fart, you can feel that coming too. But the gush of the tears just came out of nowhere. They just flooded my eyes. That was my spiritual, a moment of clarity or something. I knew something came into me that day. Everybody's going to have their own moment. Trust me, you will. Everybody's going to have that moment. But that was my moment. That was my Yahoo moment. That I'm in the right place. As we go along working with my character, my shortcomings, I'm going to say, I found out that my biggest one was pride. And then right under that was lust. And I said, lust? Nah. Yeah, not me. Nah. But, you know, the way I conducted myself out there absolutely was. I was in and out of relationships, and I didn't care if he was married or not, you know, and I didn't care, you know, because I wasn't staying very long. I wasn't staying for the duration, you know. I just had a thought. Anyway, when I was... After I got out of Pine Recovery, before I went into Pine Recovery, I went over to El Presidente. You know where that is? Or was. It's not there any longer. Used to party a lot over there in the retreat and all those places. And I went over there and just got out of jail, matter of fact. And just got out of jail, went to El Presidente, Flintstones. And this guy came up and asked me to dance. And I said, heck yeah. And then we ended up dancing for 7 years. Now, my first relationship, and I met him in a bar. That's pretty good. But we came into the program. I came in, I left, and he came in, and then I came back, and then we kind of stayed together. And he was my first relationship ever. And I got my 2 children back. He had his 2 children, plus another one. So I had 5 children in my early recovery, plus I took in foster kids. So I had 2, because I wanted to give it back. And so I had 7 children at one time, early in recovery, and going to school, and being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. My kids told me today that that was still a little bit too much, because I wasn't still emotionally available. But I was trying to do the best I could. You know, I didn't know how to be a mom either. You know, I was learning the ropes. They didn't make a manual for it. You know, so I was learning as I go. Anyway, with that being said, my husband at the time decided that he didn't love me anymore and that he left me for another woman. But he couldn't be honest with me, you know. And I said, well, who is she? And he goes, there is nobody. But there was somebody. And so what I'm going to say with that is that somebody told me what I really wanted to do is I wanted to go beat him up. I wanted to go beat her up. And I wanted to go blow up the cars. I wanted to do all those things in my head. But then I said, no, I can't do that. I can't. And I can't talk mad dog in meetings because I've seen that happen too. People get together and they come in here and they talk bad stuff about each other and we can't afford to do that. We just can't because that door needs to be open for each person. Absolutely necessary and important. But somebody simply told me one day, he said, Sherry, how did you expect him to be honest with you when he couldn't be honest with himself? That just lightened my load so much because I had gone into an emotional blackout, sober. Because the hardest thing I've ever had to do here was to sit still long enough to feel. That hurt. And I had nothing to numb it with. I had to feel it. And I got through it, and it made me stronger, and it made me more aware of my behavior. And I said, well, that was God getting back to me. That was my karma for all that stuff I did in the past, right? Nah, I was just kidding myself. But and then my next relationship I got into, there was a fella that came around in the meetings, and he was up here speaking, and he said, yeah, I had 5 years once. That should have been a red flag. But I knew he wasn't dating anybody and nobody had been with him yet. So I said, this might be a good catch. And so we actually dated for a while. My daughter was in rehab in Utah, so I wanted somebody to go with me and travel to go pick her up. So I took him along. And so we danced off and on for 18 years. That's a long time. But he couldn't get it. He just couldn't get it. He struggled with his disease. And I finally had to let that go. And I had to kind of roll over a little bit into Al-Anon, and I'm kind of rolled into it right now, you know, how to stay separate and keep my side of the street clean and not be a part of somebody else's disease and allow them to do what they need to do and let go with love. That's difficult. There was one guy in between. I see. So all those years I was, I stayed away from people. I met my first husband when I was 16. He was 21. I'm all over the board, I know. I don't get out much, so I'm just like, I'm all kind of excited now. So I was 16, he was 21, and I married him when I was 19, had my daughter when I was 20, left him when I was 21, and stayed legally married to him for years because I wasn't going to be that woman who got married multiple times. It wasn't until I got into recovery that I got married 2.5 more times. Oh, you caught that half, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that was my big oops in recovery. There was a newcomer, and he was looking pretty good. Straight out of the joint, you know what I mean? Tattoos. Mm-hmm. Bald head. Mm-hmm. And I was in the process of moving to Nevada, and he had what I wanted. He had a truck. Now, those are those shortcomings that we're talking about that we still kind of hang on to and that I was still using, but I thought I was kind of using it in a good way. Not true. But so they flare up in a heartbeat. So I kidnapped him. I did. I took him to Nevada with me, and he fell in love really quick and wanted to marry me. I said, oh, yeah, that sounds wonderful. Let's do it. So I got excited about putting together the wedding because back then the internet was, well, the internet was going and Facebook was just kind of starting. This guy is really telling my age. And you were streaming online, you know, a little bit. And so I always wanted to get married by the Blues Brothers. And so I arranged it in Vegas to get married by the Blues Brothers. And all these people were going to join us. You know, I had girlfriends wearing Soul Sisters, you know, T-shirts and stuff. And then we were going to go on a cruise. So I took them to Vegas. We had a great time. And after it was all said and done, we came around the corner, and that's where the real preacher guy was. And he goes, okay, you need to sign these papers. And I said, do I have to? I really didn't want to. I just wanted to play. Just wanted to have a little fun. And I signed it. And then I came home, and I told him, oh, God forgive me. But I told him, I said, hey, dude, I'm so sorry, but you got to go. I was so wrong. I'll never do that again. So please hear me. Don't ever do that. That was my biggest oop ever. I'll never do that again. And so now I'm single, sober, and loving it. And that's just fine with me. I'm learning more about relationships. You know, some things we just have to work a little extra on, and that's what I continue to work on is relationships. You know, and that's just fine. So it comes the ninth step. The eighth step, I made my list. I know people, places, and things. You know, some people think it's just about people, but it's people, institutions. It might be the banks, creditors, mom, dad, whoever. You know, I had a pretty long list. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about the promises. And the promises falls right after the ninth step. Imagine that. When we start to humble ourselves and own our behaviors and fess up to what we've done, things start changing for us. And it's not about saying, I'm sorry. How many times have we heard that? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I won't do it again, man. The next day you're doing it again. You know, but I had to get real and own my actions. Some people want to hear you. Some people may not want to. Some you'll be able to mend fences with. Some you won't be able to. Some will break your heart, and that's just how it's going to be. You know, we've done a lot of damage. You know, we don't heal overnight. So I made my list, and I started making my amends. And there's a few that I'll never be able to make an amends to, but as long as I remain willing to do so, it's in the right spot. And things started changing in my life. You know, gradually things started happening. I didn't have a formal education when I got here. In fact, I keep a picture of myself when I first got here in my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I looked damn good, too. I was all skinny, no teeth, all sucked up. I said, look at that girl. I thought I looked good. Can you imagine? Huh. Anyway, I keep that in my book, You know, if you got an old picture of yourself, stick it in there for a reminder or something. I do for me. Here we go, another moment. Anyway, so 10, 11, and 12 is maintenance steps. You know, I try to take a daily inventory every night when I go to bed. You know, I don't journal every night. I try to do the best I can every night. I say, could I have done something different? Could I have said something different? Did I do the right thing? Did I harm anybody today? Do I need to make an amends? And if I do, then I make the correction. My strength is my God. And somebody put it pretty simply for me. They said it's good orderly direction, you know, because I didn't have a real concept of the meaning behind it, you know. And they said if you continue to do good things and do the right things, then you're doing God's work, you know. I know the difference today. Back then I was like a squirrel. But when things are calm in my life, and things are just kind of mellow, I know I'm doing the right thing, and I know that God's working through me. When I get crazy, and I'm all over the board and indecisive, then I know I'm doing self-will. And I need to get out of my way so I can let God in to take care of business. Because every time I step in, things fall apart. Things fall apart. And when they say, stay in the now, that's so true, because if I do good today, then tomorrow might be a better day. You know, we got a guy here with 2 days. Shoot, tomorrow he's going to have 3 if you don't drink, right? Yeah, that's incredible. You guys gave me goosebumps. You're our future. You really are. Thank God the people were here. There's one person in here that was here when I got here, and that's Mike. You know, I love this man. We've been to all our weddings. Every single one of them we've been to. You know, I said, oh, you were probably the one that got away. Who knows? You know, but we bond here. You know, brothers and sisters. You know, I know when I was in Pine Recovery, it was difficult because we had to walk in packs. You know, and I said, oh, God, everybody's looking at us. You know, and I remember as a woman, we had to go to the Tuesday night women's group, and I said, oh, Lord, you know, and I'd go to that meeting, and they'd be sitting there. If you guys are out there, please forgive me. They'd be sitting there in the chairs, you know, crocheting or doing something. And I'm saying, what am I doing in this meeting? You know, I don't want to be here. I want to be around the guys, you know, but I cherish women's meetings today. They're my strength. Men are my strength, too. I learned from you as well. I learned how to be a lady. You know, I learned how to stand up and say no. You know, I learned how to be able to communicate with a woman and not be jealous, you know, or be judgmental. Now, you're probably out there all just taking my inventory like crazy, and that's okay. Because I'm taking all yours. No. Right? But we do that, right? We go in and we're judging everybody, we're looking at somebody, or look at her, or look at him. And my sponsor used to tell me, that's okay. You can take everybody's inventory, you can take their inventory, but make sure that when you do, that you don't gossip, you don't spread bad things, you don't... You know how rumors are. It hurts people. And hurt people hurt people. And that's what we've done all of our lives, right? I don't want to be that person anymore. So when I take inventory, she says, it's okay. You know, take their inventory. Take what you need. Discard the rest. Make sure your own house is in order. Because chances are your house is a mess. All right? And make sure you sign your name at the bottom of that inventory. Amen to that, right? Because I can't judge you. Who am I to judge? Because who knows that I might be doing that tomorrow. You know, who am I? What I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that just because I have 34 years means a lot, means I'm older now. So I got here when I was 30. do the math. And so we age. We get to age here gracefully. Right? But where was I going with that? Doggone it. That's what happens when you get older, too. Any feedback?
No.
I forgot where I was.
What you love about AA.
Yeah, what you love.
Oh, what I love about AA is that we're all equal here. We're all equal. Whether you're new or old, we are all equal. We are all the same, trying to find that solution, trying to find the hope, the love, the compassion that we've all been looking for. We've all been searching for that. I know I have. In my deepest of souls, of my heart, all I wanted was to be loved. But I have to love myself first, for you can love me. In the earlier days, am I doing on time?
Yes.
Not out of time yet?
I have 6 more minutes.
My sponsor used to tell me to get little index cards. And I have to write positive things on it, like, you're beautiful, I love you, you're smart, all these things. I had to put it in the mirror, because I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. So I had to put these things on the mirror, and then when I got in the bathroom, I had to look at that doggone index card and look straight in the mirror and say, Sherry, I love you. And then I'd blink real quick, see if she's still there. Now, when I look today, you know, it's kind of like that movie in Titanic, and that little lady is looking at that mirror, and she says, oh, the reflection has changed some. I can honestly say that I love myself today. You know, I have other issues today. It's called health issues. Things happen when you get older, you know. But I'm really grateful to be here. I really am. I can't say enough about Alcoholics Anonymous. What time is it?
49.
Okay. I can't say enough about this program. I really can't. In our medallions, you guys get those chips?
Yeah.
On those chips, it has unity, it has service, then it has recovery. This is unity right here. It's coming together as a whole. Service is what you guys are doing. You're showing up, you're suiting up, you're reading, you're doing chips, you're at greeters. Your secretarian, your taping, that service work. And recovery is what you get in return. It's awesome, man. They told me, don't leave before the miracle. And it took me a little while, and I said, when's the miracle coming? It was happening the day I stopped drinking. The miracle was working inside of me. You know, and it took me, so don't, you know, for the newcomers, it took me a good year to detox, you know, and going up and down and roller coaster all around. The only thing I did right was I didn't pick up. That's the only thing. And I did step work. And I remember, I'll share this. When I was 2, I went up to somebody. We had New Visions and it got started. It was, the house was over there off of Murray, I believe. And that was their first home. And my sponsor says, you're ready to sponsor somebody now. Because I was pretty sick when I got here. Like I told you, it took a good year for me to detox. And I think I got teeth then, too, so that's pretty cool. And so I went over there, and I was looking for somebody. I said, I need to sponsor somebody. And I found this little Hispanic gal. She had long hair. She had no teeth either. And I said, well, that's my girl. And I said, hey, I'm going to be your sponsor. She goes, I don't like white girls. I said, what? You don't like white girls? What are you talking about? And I can say this, I'm going to cry, because we've been together for 31 years. I tried to let her go when I moved to Nevada, but she wouldn't do it. She goes, we can do long distance. And I said, okay, we can. In fact, she's going to be speaking at the Friday night meeting at 7 o'clock if you guys want to hear her. So anyway, we've been together for 31 years. I can't even fathom that. You know, sponsorship's so important. Sponsors are not therapists. We're not doctors. We're not nurses. We're not bankers. You know, we're just somebody that can help guide you through the steps and get you through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we're here for. And somebody that you can confide in and learn how to trust. You know, and when people say, oh, I fired mine, there's no such thing as firing anybody around here. If it doesn't work, move on. You know, that person will understand. You know, but find somebody. It's important. With that being said, did I do my experience pretty good?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are good. Huh? How about my strength? My strength is God, right? Yeah. Good. And my hope is this. My hope is that each and every one of you embrace Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to welcome you home. May God keep you and bless you. Thank you for letting me share.